The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
A stray comment on a random podcast proves even the NFL can screw up really important stuff. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday, and it is May 3rd, and I think there are even a couple of spring games still to be had tomorrow. I'm pretty sure that's the case. But for most of us, we have turned our attention to roster building and the portal, and by COB today, I believe, we should have the final carved in stone, dip the ring in gold, and there you go. It's official. List of who's in the portal. Now, they don't have to be out of the portal by, you know, close of business today, but this is the, you know, the final list, and we, the grads and everybody else. So we're all paying attention to that. And one position in particular that I've been all, like, player movement, the ability to fruit basket turn over the roster and maybe improve. And even Deion, they weren't good last year. They didn't go 1-11. And he may be right. Now, I don't know why he should be saying it right now, but he may be right. Maybe Shador is a top five pick. So, like, you can flip it over, man. So we're all paying attention to the portal. And just like Colorado did when Deion strip-mined the Jackson State roster, getting a quarterback, it's the fast pass. It's like the express lane. I don't want to wait in line with everybody else, so I'm going to go get a quarterback. I'm going to get somebody else's quarterback who has learned, trained, eaten, studied, watched film, gone to class, got credits, and now he's Joe Burrow, where, what was the story? Walking off the field. I've talked about that. Yeah, walking off the field of the national championship game. Why'd you hang out with the student section so long? Quote, I wanted to beat some of them before I left. One class, online. I don't think he ever darkened a doorway, like on campus, like, I mean, for a classroom. I don't think. So it's the fast pass, man. Now, are they all going to be Joe Burrow? Hey, we brought this guy in. He wound up being the first overall draft pick. He won the Heisman, and we went undefeated and won a national championship and set every offensive record in history. I don't know, 3 years after we were running the toss dive. So, yeah, that play to, I don't know, Spencer Ware to what Joe Burrow did. I have talked about this principle specifically with quarterbacks, that if I am a program, certainly in the Big Ten or the SEC, and I'm just talking about being able to, I'm money, I'm going to put my right there on the table. If I'm any team in those conferences, and a lot of teams in the other two power conferences, I'm never spending a scholarship on a three-star or below quarterback again. I'll just take the pass on this year, and I'll go get somebody's redshirt freshman or sophomore or junior or six-year senior. And I'm doing that all, like, every year. I'll go get one or two in the portal, and we'll see how it goes. And if I can get a four-star or higher, okay, different. Daddy played there. He grew up in state. Whatever. Mama was the mascot in college. Whatever. But he's coming to Missouri. Okay, that's different. But otherwise, if I'm Missouri and I'm not getting a four-star or a five-star, I think I'm getting Kelly Bryant. I think I'm going somewhere, and I'm going to get a grown man who's already graduated and doesn't have to really be bothered by class. So as instant success as that can be, when it's like Nick Marshall, we forget about him because that was pre-portal. Remember, he didn't have spring practice. He showed up, practiced like a day and a half later. Gus is like, he's the quarterback. So we talk about those, but it's rare that it's Joe Burrow. It's rare that it's exactly like that. Because quarterback, there are so many layers to that onion, and getting it right, my goodness. Well, in the NFL, it's even more important. And we think that the NFL is like just the most buttoned up, professionally run organizations that exist. They get everything right. Folks, that is not true. Buddy of mine, actually, he worked at the flagship for an NFL franchise, and they had just, you know, signed the new, you know, rights deal. And so he says their first year, it's like mid-season, I was talking to him. I was like, how's it going with, you know, this NFL team? And he said, Chuck, they're just as screw up and amateur as anybody else. He says, during the season, we get calls at like 12:30 on a Friday. Hey, we've decided to do this promotion. Can you get something on the air about it? He's like, this is an NFL team. And so they're just like, Heath, I'm sure you have experience with the Carolina Panthers, like where you've looked at them and you're like, you're supposed to be in the NFL. Like, it's always this idea we have that they're this buttoned up, they get everything right. Well, folks, that's just not true. There are just as many screw-ups and everything else that means screw-ups in the NFL as any other industry. And they get stuff wrong all the time. And in the case of quarterback evaluation and development, it's a hard record of the last, say, 15 years or so, and it's getting worse and more expensive and more damaging to franchises and to the career aspirations of some really outstanding former college quarterbacks. Zach Wilson's looking around going, I might not get a pension. All right, you only need 4 seasons. I might not get a pension. It's 3 seasons, and then I think you get credit for, quote, a season at 4 games. That's how it used to be, at least. And so you need it. The phrase was always, I need 3 seasons and 4 games. That gives me my 4 years, and that would give me my pension. Well, there are top 10 quarterbacks who aren't certain they're going to get their pension. Jalen Smith, do y'all know who he is? He's the Steelers' backup to Najee for now, I guess. Najee didn't get picked up for his 5th-year option. But Jalen Smith is the Steelers' backup. And he was on his teammate, Cam Hayward. I'm a big fan of Cam Hayward. Liked his dad, too. Cam Hayward's podcast, which is More Than Football. And can't, well, I said a random podcast. It's not just football. So it's, and when I say a random podcast, I'm a big fan of Cam Hayward. And like I said, his father going way, way, way back. His dad actually doesn't get the credit he probably deserves. He was part of that Barry Sanders thing that said juniors, we're going to do what we want. He had a role in that as well. But Cam Hayward's not just football podcast. The reason I say it's a random podcast, because it's just another guy who's got a laptop and some headphones. And he can have people call in, and they talk for 12 minutes, and then they post it on YouTube, and they're like, hey, I got a video blog. I got a podcast. Well, the Steelers are having their draft over the weekend, just like everybody else. And Cam Hayward and his Jalen Warren, excuse me, the backup, getting more random all the time, suggested that Danny Smith, the Steelers special teams coordinator. He said that Danny Smith wants to use Justin Fields, newly acquired Justin Fields, to return kicks. So there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of podcasts out there. Hundreds of them about football, hundreds of them from players. I think the Kelce's has become one of the, there's just a podcast by 2 football players. A year ago it was, now a little more than that. Well, on this podcast, the backup tailback is talking about how the special teams coordinator wants to use the newly acquired quarterback to return kicks. Now, that almost certainly will not happen. But the fact that this is a real-life coach, been a coordinator for Mike Tomlin for 11 years. Folks, it's him saying this. It's not a Steelers fan. It's not Real Charlie Batch 1-6, kind of late on a Saturday night on Twitter. This is a coach who Mike Tomlin employs who is at least thinking about it. I don't think Justin Fields will ever return a punt or a kick or anything else. I don't think he'll be handed the football. Maybe won't even, I don't think they'll throw it to him. I think he's going to try to be a quarterback, and maybe he'll have a few more seasons in the league, but he's never going to set the league on fire. That's kind of how it's going to turn out for Justin Fields. But no coach in Arizona has said a thing about putting Kyler Murray on punt returns. I don't believe there's any discussion about Josh Allen returning kicks. This is about Justin Fields, and even the most casual musing about this furthers comments on the wretched results most teams get from their first-round quarterbacks. That's the commentary here. The fact that there's even this sort of on-the-periphery discussion, the wretched results that most NFL teams are now actually forcing into their quarterbacks, it really is on them. And I've talked about that before. You have to play immediately, and when you start playing, as soon as the football touches your skin, you have to have picked the receiver and let the football go. We're forcing them because we don't block and we don't have tight ends and fullbacks, and so like it's horrible. Like you're setting them up for failure. To that point, five of the first 15 picks from the 2021 draft, including Justin Fields, quarterbacks. Here's what we have for those five quarterbacks who were taken at the top of the 2021 NFL draft. Now, everybody's looking for their answer. Everybody's looking for their, quote, franchise quarterback. And so when what you think is a stud comes along, I don't fault the mindset at all. I fault the execution, the evaluation, and then what you kind of pigeonhole these kids into doing. So let's go back just 3 years when it was as stacked and loaded and ready as any draft we were going to find when it comes to quarterbacks. In fact, it sort of tied a record. The first three picks, all quarterbacks. Of the first 15 picks where we find five QBs, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. After 3 years, and I'm going to say just 3 years, we have a starter, traded for a sixth-round pick, traded for a fourth-round pick, might return punts, traded for a sixth-round pick. If you want to extend past Mac Jones at 15, who was traded to his hometown team, the Jags, to back up Trevor Lawrence, traded for a sixth-round pick. If you want to extend beyond that, do you know, top of your mind, who the next quarterback was out of that draft? It's Kyle Trask. He's a second-round pick. Kyle Trask has also been in the league with the Bucs for 3 years, 23 yards passing. Kellen Mond, he's got 5 yards passing, has been released 4 times, was just claimed off the Colts practice squad by the Saints, which is his fourth team now. Davis Mills was the next quarterback. After 2 seasons with Mills, Houston spent the second overall pick on their actual quarterback. So, I've said this before. I've heard fans like, how can they all suck? You're right. They can't. What they're being forced into doing is leading to these results, to the absurd point that even though I don't think that we'll ever see Justin Fields throwing a hand up to avoid the big hit, the conversation from a real-life NFL special teams coordinator who can work for somebody like Mike Tomlin for 11 years, that guy's looking at Justin Fields' 11th overall pick as QB just 3 years ago and going, maybe he can return kicks. It's an absurd situation, and the adults in the room have done this. It's 100% on them. All right, we're going to break. Continue next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show. I appreciate you coming here for your college football conversation. Full up on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Coming up about 15 minutes, Jordan Hill. He talks UGA at Dogs247. SportingNews.com, man, I can't tell you. The Sporting News growing up. Heath Klein, our producer. Heath, did you ever get Sporting News, the actual mag, or even back in the day, the newsprint thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to get that occasionally. I was never as super into the baseball part of it as some people were, whereas, oh, they got all the box scores. That wasn't me. But there was still really good content in there, and sometimes I liked their covers better than Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated always got the hype, but I didn't always love the covers as much as I did some of the Sporting News ones.
Yeah, Bill, he knows how fond I am of the history of the Sporting News. I mean, it goes back to like the 1890s, I think. And it was originally, you know, heavy concentration on baseball. And this was kind of neat for a kid who started. I mean, I went to my first major league game in 1977, third grader. The technology, it was Twitter in like the late 70s, because it would show up on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday maybe. And it would have every box score up through like Sunday from the previous week, every team. And then it would have, it was the original aggregator. It would have just tons of articles from the first two or three, four days from the previous week, relevant current stuff about every sport from every corner of America. It was just fantastic. Well, then I got, and I actually was still getting the, and that was old newsprint, like a big newspaper. Then it switched to a magazine format. And then in 2011 or 12, I was halfway through another year subscription to it. And it was the last magazine that I was still buying on a regular basis and has a subscription. And I got an issue, and on the cover it said, "This is our final issue. We'll be sending you a check if you have unused." And they sent me a check. But they said, "Yeah, we're just not doing this. We're going to go all digital." And a lot of the coverage, like I said, just a lot of it was based on baseball, but they do a good job in every direction. So we always have Bill Bender on. We can go heavy Big Ten with him. And we're also going to kind of bounce into the Big 12 with him and talk a little Coach Prime, because it hasn't been so super duper on the PR front for honestly about 6 weeks. When that home visit thing came out, I'm not being flippant here. Like I said, I'm a big Deion fan. I'm a huge Deion fan. I don't know if I'm a Coach Prime fan, and I am going to separate those things. Like, in an extreme case, I didn't have a choice with this. Like, I grew up watching Bruce Jenner in the Olympics and buying the Wheaties, and I don't have Bruce Jenner anymore. Deion Sanders? I had Deion when he played. I had Deion when he was on NFL Network. I had Deion. I got to be on Comcast with him back in the day. Huge fan of Deion. Then there's Coach Prime. And I don't know that I'm a fan of him. Barry Switzer, way back in the day. You know the sheriff on the Fansville stuff? That's Brian Bosworth. Barry Switzer, like maybe the best example of it when he was coaching Brian Bosworth at Oklahoma, says, I love Brian. You know, he was an honor graduate, like smart, really, really bright kid. And a two-time All-American and a two-time Butkus Award winner. He said, "I love Brian." He said, "I hated the Boz." I think I still am a Deion Sanders fan. Coach Prime, it is one ding after another, and sometimes it's even bigger than that. When he's taking time out of his day to bang on a transfer who's going to UTEP, but he's all open arms for a guy like Warren Sapp. I keep saying it. Coach Prime doesn't realize that ultimately he is in the kid business, and he has not reflected that a whole lot. What's up, Heath?
So we're looking now that the portal is closed at a limited market, Chuck, of what is available. For better or worse, I don't know if there's a comprehensive list of every last kid that's in the portal, but at this point, if you are a school and you have a weakness, you know. You either have what is on your roster or what is available on the shelves. The shelves are not getting restocked until December for anybody who can help you in this fall's football season. And I think in Baton Rouge, they're starting to get a little nervous, Chuck, because the assumption was, oh, yeah, we're going to be able to get some defensive tackles. We know we need to, but we're going to be able to get some defensive tackles. We're LSU. We've got resources. This is a program that could easily be a playoff program. We've got a long history of sending players to the NFL from this position. Yeah, we will get this done. Chuck, the shelves are starting to get thin at defensive tackle, and LSU keeps not getting them. And in this case, the latest one is Dominic Williams. This, from the very beginning, when he put his name in from TCU, Oklahoma was the name you heard, but you also heard everybody needs defensive tackles, so maybe somebody could come in over the top with more money. Texas tried to get involved. LSU definitely.
LSU got a visit.
Yeah, LSU got a visit. They were definitely involved, and yet it's not happening. And so, I mean, at this point, they still have that kid out of Kent State that they've been involved with in C.J. West, and I don't know what he's looking for. I don't know how good he is. I mean, again, he's a Kent State. He's an experienced player. Good schools want him, but I don't know if he is like impact number one defensive tackle for you, or if he was somebody who would have been a nice piece to add, but not your number one piece to add. But if they don't get C.J. West, Chuck, they're going to have a problem in Baton Rouge, and I don't think anybody thought that was possible, but it's really looking like it might be.
Yeah, there are a couple of other names, and you're right, the timing and just the chest-out approach. Like the baseball coach, we talked about that, Jay Johnson, he's like, I want players to know we got name, image, likeness money, and they're not having a great season this year, but that was the same. Well, Brian Kelly's like, I just want to be clear, and he wasn't like Jay Johnson. But he's like, I want to be clear, we're after tackles. And we talked about that, and then I guess the anecdotal timing of the next day. So you're right. At this point, despite every name we brought up, they've still just added the Wisconsin transfer. And there's the kid from Michigan State, Simon Barrow, and he is not committed anywhere. He's visited Miami and Mizzou as well. But he's also supposed to be boys of Bo Davis. I don't know. They've got a kid from Louisiana Monroe as well, another tackle. So I don't know. I mean, I'd seen a note yesterday about how LSU was trying to work a visit and get the Wake Forest corner on campus, and I thought that was interesting. But you get a guy who's, you know, kind of a long corner, and he's played a little bit. Well, of course you'll take him. I wonder if it's now a pivot because they realize what you're saying, Heath. Like, he was clear, crystal. We are only taking tackles, maybe a corner, on the heels of a lot of the other tackles either kind of cooling, which may be the case with Simon Barrow, either cooling or just outright, no, there's only one of me, and I'm going this other place. So I agree with you. It has certainly got the attention there. But you got to do the best you can. What do you do if you don't have tackles? You start looking at some of your ends, and then you have to have an edge who maybe actually fits at will. Well, actually, he's going to be on those line of scrimmage. Like, you've got to adjust all this stuff, and it's a trickle down.
Now back to Southern.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year. All college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Kirby got a raise. I have to imagine that was the least combative I want a raise conversation in history. Kirby Smart got a raise. He's now at $13 million and some dollars. Kirby's raise is more than the total salary of his boss, the athletic director, who also got a raise, including his bump. All right? His total salary still is less than just the raise Kirby got. So you get to that situation in Southern football sometimes where we've said it before, some guys don't have, like Nick Saban didn't have a boss. I'm pretty sure Kirby doesn't have a boss. Kirby go into state capitol and get a law changed. All right. Kirby walk around with no pants on in Athens if he wanted to. All right. national championships, plural. Want to welcome on right now, 247, it's Jordan Hill. Jordan, how's your Friday, friend?
Hey, doing good. Not quite as good of a week as Kirby Smart's having, but I'd say I'm having a pretty good week.
Yeah, I don't make more than my boss. I assume you don't either.
No.
Talk about the money first, because we'll get to the dynamic there, because there's a real short list of college football coaches who don't have a boss, not really. But just talk about the money. $13 million, that's a flex by Georgia as much as Kirby.
Definitely, and it passes Dabo Swinney, which I thought is kind of funny because that's who Georgia's going to be playing in the season opener come late August. But, yeah, you know, I think this was one of those things that was bound to happen. I think Kirby's made it very clear at this point that this is going to be the job he has in football. You know, I thought it was really telling this past offseason that there was absolutely no mention of Kirby Smart and an NFL opportunity. Nope. And he doesn't strike me as someone who would want to coach, but it felt like if he was going to go, this would be the year you'd at least hear about it. And, I mean, there was nothing. So, I mean, it's been pretty clear at this point that Kirby's going to be coaching college football, and the only job he's going to have is coaching at Georgia. So, like you said, I think this was a pretty easy negotiation. I think that, you know, he and Jimmy Sexton, they might have sat down, and Kirby probably sitting there having both of his rings, you know, there on the table and maybe just tapping on the table a little bit. But, no, I mean, you know, I think it shows Georgia's committed in keeping Kirby around, and Kirby wants to be here, so got it done. And hey, I'm thankful they did it before media days, because a few years ago when they announced his last extension, you know, we get done talking to him, he goes up there on the, you know, at the in the big room getting ready to talk, and oh, by the way, check your email, there's another deal done. So I'm happy they did that before then, because usually media days is a total you know, run around with your head on fire. So I appreciate them doing this before things get really busy later this summer.
I want to do anything in my life as well as Jimmy Sexton does his job. Like, I want to be as excellent and productive and just as elite at anything as Jimmy Sexton is at getting contracts. All right, well, let's talk about who's working for Kirby, because I don't think Kirby's working for it. By the way, comment on that dynamic. Am I being too casual there? I mean, I know that there's a flow chart, an organizational flow chart. And I know he's got a boss and he has to submit paperwork to get reimbursed for expenses. I know all that. But if Kirby wants a copter, if Kirby wants a law change, like, it's just a matter of doing it in the right order and checking the right boxes. Like, he ain't got a boss, does he?
No, not at all. And I do think that it's important to point out that, you know, Josh Brooks wasn't the athletic director when Kirby was hired. That was Greg McGarrity, who has been retired for several years at this point. But, no, I mean, I think you see that, and you talked about it with Nick Saban. I mean, at a certain point, you know, it just sort of changes the dynamic there. And I think on the whole it's changed a lot in college football. I mean, I don't know of a ton of examples, especially, you know, among these premier programs where you would say, well, I mean, the athletic director is clearly the one running the show there. I mean, you know, I think we've seen that position for so many programs change to, you know, be a lot of fundraising. And, you know, Josh Brooks has done a very good job of that. But it's fun, too, you know, to look at how Josh Brooks is judged in doing his job. I mean, I wrote about this when they fired Tom Crean. You can't really give Josh Brooks a ton of credit for the football side of things, because Kirby already had the thing rolling before Josh got in. You basically are looking at, you know, how are they raising money? Are they keeping up with facilities, yeah, things like that? So, no, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Kirby's running the show, but clearly, you know, there's a good relationship there. And I don't think it was a coincidence that they announced both these extensions. You know, they want Kirby Smart and Josh Brooks to be part of this athletic department for years to come.
Yeah, those scenarios, if you like Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, like, he was like a mob boss. Nothing gets done in Madison without Barry. That's not what it is. And there were athletic directors like that all over, you know, college athletics. And that's just not the situation. All right, now let's talk about who's working for Kirby. Glenn Schumann, a job or the job? And I'm talking the difference between San Jose State or like Michigan State. Like, what's good enough to pry him away? Because we've seen guys, you know, quote, wait for different levels of jobs.
I mean, I think that's a $1 million question. But I think what helps Glenn is he's got the perfect example of what to do working for him as his boss. You know, Kirby Smart, Kirby's talked about this in past years. You know, he went up for the Southern Miss job. I think it was actually when they wind up hiring Todd Monken, you know, got in the mix for Auburn. I remember hearing a lot about, oh, Kirby's going to take that Auburn job. Well, then they hired Gus Malzahn instead. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a situation where Glenn is perfectly happy at Georgia. And he talked about this a couple of years ago. You know, there was a lot of smoke about him going to the NFL and being the Eagles' new defensive coordinator. And those talks kind of subsided. He doesn't take that job. And, you know, he told us when we talked to him during the fall camp that followed, you know, I'm happy at Georgia. You know, I don't have to jump just to jump. So, no, I mean, I think Glenn is going to wait till the right opportunity. I think it is interesting just to see when his name does come up, when it doesn't come up. You know, there were some people that wondered about Alabama, but I don't think there was a ton there this past off season. So, no, I mean, I think working for Kirby, he's got a perfect blueprint on what he should do, on when he should leave. But he seems really happy. So I'd be surprised if we saw him jump to like a group of five job or whatever we're going to call those now that all the conferences are falling apart. But no, I would be surprised if you saw him jump to anything other than taking over a program, much like Dan Lanning did, going to Oregon and automatically being a playoff contender from the jump.
Well, flip it around, because Bobo's already been a head coach, and I've heard things that when you've been a head coach before, number one thing, what do you want to be? I want to be head coach again. And I will say that in a lot of scenarios, sitting at the end of the table is better than sitting on the side of the table. But Bobo's already done that. He's already been the head coach. Do you think that he would want to even get a call from a program and perhaps leave again, or is he home for good?
You know, I'd say he'd probably entertain it, but I would be surprised if he took it. And I think it was, you know, kind of interesting to see all those guys come back. Obviously, Kirby, the head coach, then they bring back Will Muschamp, and then Mike Bobo follows about a year after that. I mean, I think that with a guy like Mike, you know, that situation at Colorado State was tough. I mean, not only did they not win the way he wanted to, he had some major health issues and, you know, kind of went through that. And I think he was there 5 or 6 years. But, no, I think that given the situation and even given what he went through after Colorado State, went to South Carolina, had a really rough year, Will gets fired, he's named the interim, and it doesn't go well. Go to Auburn for a year, doesn't really get along with Brian Harsin, leaves after an Iron Bowl that they should have won and somehow found a way to lose. So I get the feeling Mike is at a point in his career where he's happy with what he's done. He's back at his alma mater. He's taken over, you know, a team that is going to be the favorite to win the championship more years than not. And, you know, now we see a lot of questions of the Alabama team that you would say, you know, would have been the other argument for that in recent years. So now I'd be surprised if Mike ever became a head coach again. Would he listen if someone called? Probably. But I think he's happy working with Kirby, and it's, you know, it's just like, you know, turning the key at this point. I mean, it's pretty well set up at Georgia. They know they're going to have one of the top offenses more years than not. So I think he's going to roll with what he's got and keep it going as long as he can.
Last thing for Jordan Hill from Dogs 247, and I'm going to put my name on this. I'm going to tell you what I've heard, and I'm interested if you want to be very candid and tell me what maybe you've heard. I have heard flat out USC is cruton, and I mean active college players off other rosters and specifically defensive linemen off of Georgia's roster. That's what I've heard. I've heard that there may even be Georgia former players that get involved in that. Do you hear any of that?
Yeah, not specifically with USC, but it's one of those things where you kind of have to go through all the different rumors and try to separate what's real and what's not. And that's just sort of the nature of what it's become now with the portal, with the fact that you can transfer whenever, and, you know, with NIL, which is obviously a big piece of it.
For any reason, yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's just, it changes so quickly. And Georgia saw it this spring where after a few days after G-Day, Christian Miller says, I'm going in the portal. Okay. You know, we're watching out for that. A little less than a day later says, all right, I've changed my mind. I'm not going. So it's one of those things where I've heard a ton of stuff that, you know, you could say, is this true? Is it not? Is the truth somewhere in the middle? It's one of those things that I will say, I, you know, there's more that I can't eliminate as having been a possibility rather than say, oh, that definitely happened. But it's just, it's a wild, wild west with all the different factors that go into recruiting now. But I will say this, Georgia's done a really good job these last few spring portal windows where we go in and, you know, I'm usually watching seven or eight names because you look at the depth chart, you look at how much guys played in the spring game, and you say, all right, that's a pretty clear candidate to leave. And typically it's, you know, only a couple guys. Georgia only had two scholarship guys go in the portal last spring. So it makes for interesting things. And, yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of rumors out there. How much of that I could verify is pretty minimal.
Oh, absolutely. And you said, you know, you got to chase down every rumor. I got my list of rumors, and I was like, all right, the Georgia-USC one, I'm going to chase it down with Jordan. So I appreciate you coming on and making some time today, friend.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Chuck.
Jordan Hill, get him. Dogs 247. So I'm allowed to say that. It's an allegation. I did hear it. It's a factual statement. I was told they're recruiting our players, like active players. I don't know. I think the Pitt head coach said it. Didn't Pat Narduzzi? I heard Jordan Addison was transferring to Southern Cal. And I was like, wait a minute. No, I haven't heard Jordan Addison was in the portal. And I looked, and I was like, oh, he's not. But I heard it, and then we all know how that happened. That was Pat Narduzzi going, we've got people actively recruiting our wide receiver. And, well, he had heard the same thing everybody else did. So, I don't know. If you hear something, you just hear something. And Naeem is lighting is driving all of them. Mikael Williams is the one that a lot of folks had attached to. Either there's going to be a bump in pay or there will be a free agent situation, and that did not work out that way. He's still at Georgia. In fact, we had talked. There was a mock draft had him as a potential number one pick next year. Somebody asked me, hey, which Georgia player would be first overall next year? I was like, Carson Beck. I'm like, this guy says maybe Mikael Williams. I said, all right, I'm listening. Give him more justification. And, I mean, the justification is he looks like that and he could have an 11-sack season. And the NFL says first overall. So, all right, we're going to have a break and then come back, rapid fire one.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Hopefully we can come up with some system where, you know, players, you know, have the opportunity to share in some of the wealth in college football, but we can distribute it in a way where, you know, we keep competitive balance like other sports venues do, and something that's beneficial to the players, but something that, you know, can keep college sports, you know, in the same realm that it's been.
Nick Saban, obviously talking about the financial paths that the NCAA make, just the structure of college athletics and football, and how to do something that's fair to everybody, and went, okay, here's what I'm going to say quickly, and I love Coach Saban and have for a long time. Fair and equitable and everybody having a shot, that's the last thing he ever wanted. And I'm not talking about the players or coaches or whatever. I'm talking about program to program. The last thing he ever was interested in was Mississippi State having a level playing ground, a fair shot against Alabama. So I spent, what was it? What was the third weight room? I think the renovation was like $11 million or something. The one that everybody talked about that had the waterfall. I don't know. LSU, wasn't it Eric Reed playing in the NFL? He's like, this is the third renovation of the LSU locker room since I've left. He said, the one I played in is nicer than the one I have in the NFL still today. He said, that was what I played in. It's been fixed three times since then. So the last thing Alabama or LSU or Texas or Ohio State or Auburn, my school, your school, Heath went to Florida, Heath's school. The last thing any of them have ever had in mind was a level playing field for David's school, Western Kentucky. We've got a $13 million weight room. What do you have? Oh, well, we've got my school. We got a $14 million television. All right. What is Western Kentucky doing to counter that? Well, it's supposed to be a level playing field. No, it's not. And that was never the point. Nick Saban, the Alabama head coach who was still in the arena competing, Nick Saban was trying to put people out of business. The permanent financial wedge that has been driven now, you look at it as a bug, it's a feature. It was always part of the intent. Oh my gosh, there'll be a separation in class of the top of college football. Yes, we know. It's what we're after. My goodness. Heath, what's going on, man?
So you were mentioning the possibility, at least, of Michael Williams being in the number one spot. This is the thing I think is so interesting. I get that everybody wants to do content this time of year. You need something going on content-wise. If you're in the NFL, you got a few weeks until the schedule comes out. May 3rd. There's no real free agent moves being made anymore, so you need something. So everybody comes out with their own version of a mock draft. But there are multiple versions that have Williams in the number one spot. Meanwhile, there's also versions that have him not even in the top 10, and James Pierce of Tennessee in multiple number one spots. In fact, just looking, this just happens to be the one I pulled up. I mean, I could have pulled up five other versions. But the Pro Football Focus early mock draft has James Pierce at number one. And then another SEC player, Will Campbell of LSU, at number two. Then defensive lineman Mason Graham of Michigan, three. Cornerback Will Johnson of Michigan, four. Carson Beck, the first quarterback, at five. Followed by Kelvin Banks, the tackle from Washington or from Texas, to Washington at six. Deion Walker from Kentucky at seven. Cornerback Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame at eight. Shedeur Sanders at nine, and then edge rusher from A&M, Nick Scorton at 10. Chuck, look, call me crazy. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to put myself out on the line right now. The first four picks of next year's NFL draft will not be an edge rusher, a tackle, another lineman, and a cornerback. I'm just going to go ahead and call my shot right now. Like, we're in silly territory here. You want to say these are prospects we really like? Go for it. Don't try and tell me that we're going to have a draft where we literally just had three quarterbacks go in the first three, that we're going to have four people pick before the first quarterback goes. That will not happen under any circumstances. Someone's going to need a quarterback, and someone's going to reach for one if they have to in the first few picks, because that is how it almost always works.
Yeah, the absurd nature of where we are now, I need my article, because as I said, you know, it's May 3rd, okay? You know, I can start my show on May 3rd. It's a Friday. I got a lot more of a berth today on what I want to start my show, the biggest story today, than, say, on, like, September 3rd or October 3rd. And so I've got to make my article in May one of those, you know, the monkeys with the symbols? Like, that's what this has to be. And here's the weird part we've gotten to. Saying, like, the biggest headline name in football is always the QB. Putting a QB atop your next year's mock draft won't get you any attention. Doing what you just laid out, that gets attention. Oh, my gosh, the guy doesn't have QBs.
And look, Will Campbell is a fine offensive lineman, and linemen are really important. But, Chuck, I mean, you have to be the first tackle picked in the draft, you have to have one of two things going. You have to either, one, be Orlando Pace, just be
10-time Pro Bowler,
that incredible level of player, or two, you have to have that bizarre, weird year where you've got back-to-back offensive linemen at the start of the draft with Fisher and Luke Jokel.
Yeah.
And that was a year where there were no quarterbacks. Like, there were no quarterbacks anybody liked at all that year. Like, it takes so much bizarre stuff. Will Campbell's a fine player. He might be the first tackle. He will not be picked to. Not a chance in hell.
Yeah, and looking at Mikel Williams as well, see, that's a profile of a kid who could have a pop season, but are you trying a little bit hard when you pick him as your SEC edge to be the first overall pick when James Pierce had 9.5 sacks last year, and he's also still in the SEC? Like, it just really seemed we were putting in a lot of effort to get the attention from what no one else clearly would talk about. So that was my takeaway.
Yeah, I find it funny just because so much shifts in the span of 1 year. I mean, if somebody last year had put, for example, Xavier Leggett in the first round of the draft, you would have said, okay, we're going to take your computer away and we're going to get you somewhere with no sharp edges so that you can protect yourself. And, you know, obviously he had the kind of year that got him there. Some kids that are being touted as first rounders today will not be drafted. I guarantee you this will happen. There are kids that are being touted as first rounders that will literally not go in the draft. Once upon a time, Mel Kiper Jr. had, Beck out of, not, not the George Beck, John Beck, there you go, had him BYU as the number one player in the draft out of BYU. I think he went like seventh round, and he had him as the number one player in the draft. So much changes in a year that, I mean, look, I get it. We're in the content business too, but this seems like we've got some extra large helpings of silly this year. That's all.
Agree with you, and it is like trying to roll down your window and start yelling at the other cars on the interstate. Like, that's what getting noticed in the digital space is like, and that's what this article is. It's just funny to me that to get noticed, you have to go the boring way that doesn't include names like, you know, the Georgia quarterback or the Ohio State quarterback or any other quarterback. The Texas quarterback, for instance. So, anyway, all right, going to wrap up hour one, come back, more next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands. An easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.